The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by a comic shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and to learn how you can support this and other fine Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
We're sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
Please hang up and try again.
Grab a slice of the epic podcast. Don't stick it in your mouth. Put it in your ear holes now.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nelson Lugo, Schaefer the Dark Lord, and Rachel Shank.
That's me.
Ladies and gentlemen, coming to you from the beautiful and spacious Studio 6C in Astoria, Queens, this is the Epic Podcast, Episode 34. I am your host, Schaefer the Dark Lord.
I am your other host, who is also your other host, Rachel Shank, today.
Yay! So, all right, let's... In the interest of full disclosure,
elephant in the room, let's address it.
Nelson Lugo could not be with us this month.
Yep.
He is seeking treatment for his heroin problem.
Yeah.
That's not true. I don't actually think Nelson Lugo even knows what heroin is.
I think he is the female lead of a comic book.
In Nelson Lugo's mind, that's what heroin is.
Yeah, he's actually addicted to heroin.
He can't understand why so many people are so strung out on Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
So it'll be the two of us catching up this month.
Just the two of us.
How have you been, Rachel Shank? How's your summer?
Oh, my summer has been lovely until a couple days ago when it became so hot.
Yeah, that's another disclaimer I should make about this episode. You may pick up some additional noise in your playback device this month, and it's the sound of fans in this room. Now, we considered not running the fans in the interest of not inconveniencing you with the additional noise, but then it doesn't really matter because it's more important that we don't die.
Yeah. I don't want to melt.
It's really hot.
It's really warm
today. It's so stupid hot.
The warmth. Speaking of warmth, I would like to just say that Mark Robert Turner and Christopher Douglas Crouch became husband and husband on July 18th.
Congratulations, Mark Robert Turner and Chris.
I know. It was such a beautiful ceremony.
Really? Where did they get married?
Marble Collegiate Church here in New York City on 29th Street.
Oh.
Yeah. The wedding coordinator mentioned a bunch of famous people that got married there, and he was like, and most recently, or wasn't most recently, but at some point, he was like, Liza Minnelli. And we were like, Liza Minnelli got married at the same place as Mark and Chris.
Oh my God, that's a good thing to note at the top of a gay wedding.
Yes, it was very important.
Liza Minnelli, oh my God. Which one was that for her?
I don't know.
She's been married a lot.
Lots of times.
Congratulations, Mark Robert Turner and Chris.
You did it.
You did it.
They did it.
You're totally married. And then they probably did it.
Not on the day.
No, they consummated it. It's a legal requirement, or you're not married.
Yeah, I'm sure they've done it by now.
Well, if they didn't, if they waited a couple of days, and they had a couple of days where they were not married. Anyway.
Well.
So it's been really, really hot.
It's been warm.
Finally, the heat wave has come to New York City.
You know what? I'm glad that it took this long, to be honest.
Yeah, I am too.
Yeah. We had like a day where it was unbearable, and now it's finally happening. But it's like, you know what? It's going to be September before we know it, and that'll cool down.
Somewhat. September still can have a few last ditch efforts in it.
Yeah, but you know what? Even though the weather's warmer, it's still summer movie season.
It is, and that's what I do to escape the heat. I have air conditioning in one room of my apartment, and so the rest of my apartment is incredibly hot.
Yeah.
So, summer is the best time to go to the movies, so I have been spending a lot of time at the movies, eating popcorn, and just sitting in cold air conditioning and watching 20 minutes of trailers. Mm-hmm. I've seen a movie twice now just because I wanted to sit in the air conditioning a little bit longer.
Yeah.
You too have been going to the movies.
At least a movie.
At least a movie.
Yeah.
What movie did you see recently?
Well, I was lucky enough to be a part of an advanced screening of Ant-Man.
Advanced screening?
Advanced screening,
How did you get into that?
The movie that I'm working on, one of the producers does advanced screenings in College Point, which, by the way, is far from Astoria.
What borough is that?
It's still in Queens. Oh. It's like at the end of the Seven Line.
Oh, wow.
It's at the end of the Seven Line.
I didn't know that anybody went there. I thought it just got darker and and darker until you didn't exist anymore. You went into some...
You went quantum.
You went down to the molecular level. Yeah.
To get to College Point. No, it was really lovely. It was like this late midnight screening of the movie. And even though I was totally exhausted from the day's activities, I loved it. I loved it.
I fucking loved Ant-Man so much.
I loved it. If you like heist movies, you will like this movie. If you like superhero movies, you will like this movie. If you like Paul Rudd's abs, you will love this movie.
If you like Paul Rudd's face or his quirky, smug little reactions to things, you'll love it. Yeah. I love Paul Rudd.
Oh my God, yes.
He was awesome in this movie.
Also, if you like completely self-aware comedies, you will love Ant-Man.
True.
So self-aware.
If you love Evangeline Lilly,
which you should,
then you'll love Ant-Man's sequel. Oh, fuck. Spoilers. Ant-Man is an excellent addition to the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
It truly, truly is. It renewed my hope in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Had something challenged your hope?
I was not the most pleased, if you remember, with the second Avengers movie. I felt it was trying to cram too many things in. It was nice to like take a step back and just like get a new origin story like completely separate from the behemoth that will become the next group movie.
It was refreshing to see an origin story again.
It was really nice.
I just can't be pleased. I will complain about superhero movies showing and their origin stories on and on and on, but I found Ant-Man's very refreshing, and it was a lot of fun. Had a good villain. They made great use of Hank Pym, since Hank Pym wasn't the actual Ant-Man in the movie,
which I was really pleased with how quickly they addressed like that.
Yeah,
how it was like this happened, and then other stuff, like here's why there wasn't an Ant-Man already and why Hank Pym is so much older than the rest of the Marvel Universe heroes.
Also, to that end, the way that they addressed Wasp.
Yeah, Janet Van Dyne.
Yeah, this is just going to be spoilery,
this
I think.
Broke my heart.
If you haven't seen Ant-Man, skip ahead.
Yeah.
Because
I mean, I feel like we've already ruined enough of it.
Good. Don't care. This is what power feels like. I get the feeling that Wasp is going to be a major part of the Phase 3 of the Marvel Universe.
I hope so.
Because they spent a lot of time obscuring her face in flashbacks.
Yeah.
So there's something important about the original Wasp and obviously the second Wasp, mm-hmm. who we're going to get sooner than later.
Which, by the way, Wasp is one of my favorite Marvel heroes.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Huh.
I love her. I love Janet Van Dyne. I love her. I fell in love with her watching Earth's Mightiest Heroes, that cartoon that was on Disney for a while.
Oh, right.
Oh, wait.
Wasp was a character on that?
Yeah, she was.
Huh.
She was kind of dating Hank, and Hank was being all like, I like science, not crime fighting. She's like, you need to stop being an idiot. It was great. Skipping all of the, like, spousal abuse. It was fun.
Yeah, it was. They did in a very subtle way. They made me care so much more about Wasp's history and about Evangeline Lilly's character, Hope Pym, caring about her mother's story. They did so much in so much less screen time of making me care about that character than The Amazing Spider-Man did in two movies, making me care about Peter Parker's parents. Yeah. So, well done.
Bravo.
Ant-Man.
Yeah.
That was great.
It was so good. I also really loved how aware it was of the rest of the Marvel Universe without being blatant about it.
Right. In fact, when they did, it was kind of for humor.
Yeah, poking fun at the whole, we're this big engine now.
Yeah, like they ask Hank Pym is hiring this burglar to put on his magic suit and go fight crime. And his response is, isn't this something like an Avenger should do?
Should we do this? And the fight scene. The
fight scene with Falcon.
I loved it.
That was awesome.
All I could think while watching that, because I've seen interviews with the actor who plays Falcon, Winter Soldier came out, and he's really hyped about being an Avenger.
Oh, he's so excited.
They played a clip of him, like, flying around, and he was wooing and cheering this clip on this talk show. I don't remember where it was. I'll try and find it and put it in the doobly-doo.
Yeah.
But he was so delighted. He was like, whoa, look at me flying! And so when he was fighting Paul Rudd, I was like, he watched this, and he was so happy.
Oh, he was so excited.
Tickled pink, just legitimately delighted.
I like seeing that. I like seeing actors who are really excited about getting to do the work of being in superhero movies.
Totally.
Because I feel like there's so many actors who are cast in them that they're kind of jaded, and it's almost like it's part of their they're almost required to act disinterested with the whole thing. Of course, thinking like Robert Downey Jr. is kind of like, you know, it's a gig. It's an acting gig. I'm an actor.
Mm-hmm.
Or I don't know. I feel like so many of the actor Christian Bale has been that way about it, like everything he's played. But to see somebody like Anthony Mackie be incredibly psyched, like, I'm playing a freaking Avenger.
Yeah.
This gig is awesome. It's so nice. And I feel like that makes him so much more endearing to fans, because any fan would be like, holy shit, I'm playing an Avenger.
Yeah, I would want to play an Avenger. Good Lord.
I would need abs, but then... I would love to play an Avenger.
You would get they would give you abs.
They do. They give you abs.
They do.
They were like, hey,
abs.
Chris Pratt, come play Star-Lord. Hold on, we need you to step over to our ab enrichment center.
Which
first.
Reminds me, Nelson Lugo is not in attendance because he has actually been cast as an Avenger and is currently getting his abs.
So we wish you the best, the speediest recovery for you and your abs,
and your
Nelson Lugo.
New sexy Marvel abs.
Have you seen any other movies since last time we spoke?
I haven't.
Oh, then I'm not going to go on and on about this.
Okay.
But there's a new Pixar movie out called Inside Out.
I want to see it so badly.
It's a Pixar movie. They're master storytellers.
Mm-hmm.
I've enjoyed every Pixar movie. I think I've seen all of them in the theater except for like the second Cars movie.
Which?
Because I saw the first Cars movie.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I think I've seen all of them, and I love every one of them, and they are masters. They know all of the right notes to hit to make you cry, and I don't know that one has made me cry quite as much as this one.
Ooh.
And that goes for the opening short, which is a short called Lava as well. I saw Inside Out twice in 3 days. I don't think I'm going to go again. I think I've had enough of being something of a emotional masochist for 1 month. Because I saw it like twice in 3 days. And then on the fourth day, I had therapy. So I don't think I'm going to go see it again. But I strongly recommend that everybody sees Pixar's Inside Out, a beautiful explanation of how our emotions work. And by ours, I mean ours if we're all 11-year-old girls.
Oh, well.
Because most of the movie takes place inside the head of an 11-year-old girl.
Oh, that sounds...
It's just absolutely wonderful. Mm. I can't say enough.
Yeah.
I want to talk to you as soon as you see it and watch you talk about it without getting choked up.
Oh, it's going to be difficult. I have a lot of emotions lately. I'm full of them.
You're going to love it.
Oh, God. I can't wait. I adore Pixar movies. I also really appreciate how Pixar advertises their movies.
Yeah?
I feel like they give you just a little bit. You know, I feel like a lot of studios give you a lot of, here's way too much information and too much exposition, and suddenly here's a scene that you'll never see in the movie, but we put it in because crowd appeal. They still are going for that beautiful, like, definite teaser of it.
Yeah.
From what I gather,
having
seen the trailers, it's about a league of emotions that work inside your brain. And that's all I know.
Yep.
I don't know anything else.
That's all you need to know.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as a trailer is concerned, that's all you need to know. And they didn't jam-pack it with too much action. And huge, huge, huge portions of the movie aren't even represented in the trailer, yeah. Which kind of reminds me of like WALL-E.
Yeah, or
which
Brave
you,
even.
Or Brave even, yeah, yeah. Both those are excellent examples. They give you a trailer that tells you enough of the story so that when you get in, you sit down. By the time you get in, well into the second act, you're like, I did not know that this movie was this.
Yeah.
What is this?
Yeah, I feel like Up did a similar thing.
Up did a similar thing too, yeah.
Which I really appreciate. Pixar, if you're listening, your trailers are the best.
Yeah, and, well, the movies are pretty good too.
The movies are great also, but I'm mostly calling out the rest of Hollywood for crappy trailers. Deal with it.
What else awesome have you done since the last time you were here?
Well, I'm not going to say I've been doing something awesome, but I have had a lot of free time to myself this summer.
How have you been spending that free time?
I have a Netflix account.
Very good.
And I've watched most everything I wanted to watch on Netflix, including the movie Zombievers, which I don't know if I've mentioned. Everyone watched Zombievers.
Really?
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Is it fun?
It's so weird.
Okay.
I don't know if it's for everybody, but as someone like me who loves Cabin Fever and The Evil Dead and like redneck zombies, just like really crappy horror movies,
sure.
watch it
okay.
But that's really brief. What I have been doing is I have been watching an American television show called Breaking Bad.
I am one of the last people on earth who has never seen this show. What's yeah. it about?
It is about a older chemistry teacher who gets diagnosed with terminal lung cancer, and he decides that because of his teacher's pension and the fact that like medical bills are going to be so high and so steep, he wants to start cooking meth to sell to make money for his family for after his death.
Huh.
And he teams up with this druggy former student, and together they start cooking meth and then hijinks. Oh. And then hijinks.
Sure, all kinds of hijinks.
Just hijinks.
Probably rival drug factions and the law and yes, doctors, yes. Lawyers.
Yeah. One of the DEA agents in the show is Walter White, the main character's brother-in-law. So you constantly have like the DEA's like drama happening
sure.
as sort of like a side story. And
let me tell you, I've never seen the show. All I've ever heard is that it is an absolutely flawless, infallible piece of American television. Would you confirm that, based on your experience, since you have been binge-watching this entire show in just a matter of days?
I will admit that I am indifferent to this show. Indifferent. I don't hate it. I don't love it. I'm still watching it. I'm near the end. Because I made this decision that I was going to watch this, and I just can't see the mass appeal that this show had.
Huh.
I think it is technically very good. The acting is stellar. The storyline is not catching with me in the way I feel like everyone else is caught. I feel like I quote it along with it as it's happening.
Because it's been so...
It's so...
So, what's the word I'm looking for? Ubiquitous. In your
predictable
culture.
And in my understanding of what is American drama these days, I generally see the pattern that they're following where, like, something messed up's gonna happen because dramaticness.
Yeah.
It, no offense, it's definitely, like, in my opinion, the Walking Dead television series syndrome, where it's like, what's the crazy dramatic choice here? We'll do that one. And it almost doesn't feel fueled in anything. It's just like, oh, something's going to go wrong because something has to go wrong
right.
now. You know, nothing.
Because we need a cliffhanger every season.
Yeah, we need something crazy to happen to, like, up the stakes. And I find myself understanding that people are emotionally manipulated by this show almost based on just the sheer drama of it all.
Yeah.
The sheer, this man is now a bad man, which is that transition though, like Bryan Cranston's transition through that is gorgeous. And if you're gonna watch it for a reason, watch it for Bryan Cranston. He's definitely like the thing to watch. But honestly, if you could just YouTube his best moments,
that would be
a
sizzle reel of
just
his performance.
Sizzle reel of say my name. "You're goddamn right." Like, and that was like, that's it. Like, just like moments.
Huh.
But his, I feel like a lot of people do gravitate to that show, in especially in the performance scene, because it is so well acted. It
yeah.
is, I can see technically why people like it, but I think that the story was kind of, for me, meh.
But I wonder if it's one of these things that's like fallen victim to the same thing that so much does. I mean, this is a phenomenon that is that predates social media, but social media has made it so much more ingrained, in that people who like it something so much almost feel obliged to like something so much.
Yeah.
Because this is the almost universally accepted opinion about a thing that everybody's mm-hmm. consuming. I will now go see it.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder how many people saw Mad Max and didn't actually like it, but still sung its praises, because Mad Max is a movie that is universally, like, acclaimed.
Yes.
And I feel like Breaking Bad is a show that's been like that, too. Mm-hmm. I've never seen anybody speak ill of Breaking Bad. Yes. Not even slightly disparagingly
yeah,
of Breaking Bad.
The worst thing I can say about it is it leaves me indifferent.
Yeah.
Like, I...
Even that is a pan by comparison to everything else I've ever read anybody else speak about.
And sometimes I wonder if maybe it's because a lot of people watched it week to week, you know, and they had to wait, and they had to wonder, and they had to... Where me, I just hit play on Netflix, and then it's like, oh, well, that's resolved, you know? And I'm sure, like, the culture behind it, like, the fan theories and the intrigue of what was going to happen is lost on me. And maybe that's a disservice for the show, in my opinion, because it is so instant for me right now.
There is something to be said, I guess, for the element that that the water cooler culture of a popular, critically acclaimed television series that it benefits from.
Yeah.
Because you can binge watch something and you don't get the speculation and reading websites and reviews and fan theories and stuff.
And I do have to admit that while I've been watching it, I do the research that a lot of people have done.
Oh, okay.
You know, so I was reading about a particular article called Breaking Bad's Problems and How They Corrected Them, and it sort of like gives a play-by-play of like, this happened and like it wasn't well received. And I do applaud the creator Vince G something for recognizing that fan culture and like amending some things. Like there's a couple characters that were just generally disliked in a season, and they were written off a lot faster than they were supposed to because the fans sort of had an input in it. And I really appreciate that he was taking that into account. But I will admit that for me personally, sorry, all of the internet, if you're really mad, just write at epicpodcast@gmail.com and you can read me if you feel like it. I probably won't read it because you're not going to change my mind. But it's all right. It's okay. Huh. It's for not having a lot to do. And if you already have a Netflix account, watch it, I guess. Or don't.
It's, you know, it's one of those shows that is perpetually on my list of television series that I'm going to watch that everybody liked that I have not watched that I'm going to get to. But that list is so deep, and I still haven't seen The Wire. So I'm probably not going to get to Breaking Bad anytime soon.
Yeah.
But that's interesting to hear. Again, the first less than glowing thing I've ever heard about it, and I respect that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You can love it if you want, universe. You can. I will completely support your love for it. I just will not agree with you entirely.
I've had a hard time. I feel like I used to get really excited about television series, and I loved especially ones that were already finished and that were like collected on some sort of streaming video service so that I could go and watch through them. I used to enjoy that so much, and it's hard for me to do that now. I feel like I'll look at something and it'll say four seasons. It's so daunting.
Yeah.
It's also like I have a hard time committing to these like seasons of a television series when there's just like a 30 minutes of giggles in a cartoon that's like an option instead.
Ooh, the instant giggle.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I just keep constantly rewatching our episodes of Archer. That's what I do instead of watching anything else. I keep thinking like, oh no, I'm gonna do this. You know what? Now I've got an HBO Go account now.
What?
Yeah. I got an HBO Go account. I got it gifted to me by someone.
Dang it. I was like, if you have it, will you share it?
I got it gifted to me by my ex-wife.
Oh, never mind then.
And I was like, fuck yeah, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to watch Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Everybody's been talking.
Please do. I've had
this account for like 3 weeks and I have not even tried to. I watched one episode of Girls. That's all I've done with it.
Yeah. It's an undertaking when you commit to Game of Thrones.
It's hard for me because on one hand, I feel like in theory I should be working on a rap record.
Ooh.
But I'm not. But when, I mean, I am, but just not as doggedly as I should be. But when I have downtime from that, all of it's been chewed up lately because the new Batman game came out and I bought a PS4. And so whenever I do have some downtime, and even video games, I used to, when a new video game would come out that I loved on the PS3, I would get it and I would like set aside several days in a week and I would just binge on it. And I would go on like 10-hour runs of this game and just fucking gobble it up and go and get all the collectibles and do all the side missions. Just love it. And I can't even play video games like that anymore. Now it's like I find myself, oh, there's one night a week. I'm going to give myself like a good 90 minutes to kind of like chip away at this thing. And I'm like this old, clumsy asshole who's – I'm not even good at video games. I just enjoy them. I'm not good at them. And I love the Batman games. And I replayed all the Batman games getting excited for Batman Arkham Knight. And so Arkham Knight comes out and I still spend the whole time just going like, wow, it's all so pretty. What does this button do? I'm just this angry old man just chipping my way through the game. And it's wonderful. But it's going to take me, like, the rest of the year to finish.
Yeah, if it helps, I'm playing Lego Harry Potter.
How is it?
Which is for, like, 12-year-olds, and I suck at it.
Oh, yeah, but those Lego games are fun.
They're so fun. I love that I've, like, learned spells and stuff, and I, like, switch through them, and I'm like, ah, Expecto Patronum, deal with it.
Yeah.
It's really great.
It does not matter that the games are for kids, because those kids they've evolved.
So it's hard.
They have higher functioning brains than we do and they can learn new languages by playing video. I don't know.
They can learn how to control the joystick way better than me.
Yeah.
Even though my gaming system does not have a joystick.
Me too. I'm practically looking down my bifocals to figure out how I'm supposed to punch out a Joker goon.
Yeah. How religiously do you check out walkthroughs? Because I have my computer next to me ready for walkthroughs.
iPhone is always open on my living room table and open to YouTube.
Yep.
Always. Because I know that I'm going to get stuck somewhere and I know that some like British 11-year-old is going to show me how to do it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I use walkthroughs a lot.
I love them even though I'm really embarrassed that I
I'll tell you what I don't do though. I don't get a new game and start it on easy mode. I start it on the normal mode.
Yeah.
But you know who does start every game on easy mode? Nelson Lugo. Who could not be with us this month.
Because he's playing Batman Arkham Knight on hard mode, and he's just really frustrated.
He's actually training at his new job tonight. He's going to be working at Pete's Burgers on 30th Avenue in Astoria, and tonight they are training him on grill. So we wish all of the best of luck to you, Nelson Lugo, in your new career.
Please bring burgers home to the apartment.
Oh, here's a thing that I've done since the last time that we met to record.
Okay, what was it?
I went to the 9/11 Museum. Yeah, you can't really say yay after that, you know? Here's something about me. I have and have always had kind of a morbid fascination with 9/11.
Mm-hmm. You were here when it happened.
No, I was not. I was living in San Francisco, but I was on tour with a metal band that I played drums in, and mm-hmm. we were in Western Pennsylvania when it happened. We were on our way to New York, mm-hmm. but then we just heard that they shut down New York and you couldn't get in or out, and we were broke and our tour was falling apart and we hated each other, so we used it as an excuse to turn around and go home. We were supposed to be out for like another 2.5 weeks.
So you essentially Mariah Carey glittered your tour.
I kind of did. Yeah, yeah. I kind of did. And I kind of was grateful that we got to go home. We were having a really bad time. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I've always had this fascination with it, and I'm not a truther. Like I think when some people say they think about 9/11 a lot, it's because they're truthers. And they're like, it's a conspiracy, man. Yeah. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I don't think that our government deliberately made 9/11 happen or mm-hmm. let it not happen. I don't think that they had prior knowledge of it. I don't think that they were like, let's use this to forward an agenda. I think some pretty weird shit happened with Building 7, but I'm not going to talk about that. But I'm not interested in 9/11 as a conspiracy. Mm-hmm. I believe that 19 Saudi hijackers backed with training from Al-Qaeda took over four commercial airliners and use them as weapons to hit three of their four intended targets. Yeah. I believe the narrative that was sold to us. If that makes me a sheeple, fine, but I think that that's what happened.
I can't think anything other than that happened and continue like being a solid human being.
I agree. Yeah, it starts to hurt if you start.
Yeah, if you think that our democracy would do us such a disservice.
Right. But I guess I'd say I'm fascinated with 9/11. I'm fascinated with the World Trade Center. I'm fascinated with that mm-hmm. building. Like, yeah. I loved Man on Wire, the documentary about Philippe Petit, who in 1974, he was a tightrope walker, and he broke into the still under construction World Trade Center and did a tightrope walk between the towers.
Yeah, they're making a movie of that.
They made an excellent documentary, but they're making
A feature film.
Yeah, who is it that's playing him? I remember seeing him in the trailer and was like, holy shit, he looks just like him.
I want to say Joseph Gordon-Levitt, but I think I'm wrong.
Oh, you're right. No, you're right. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
I
knew,
because my heart was palpitating when I was thinking about it. I have to admit that I have a weird emotional connection to 9/11, not for what happened in New York, but my mother was actually in Pittsburgh with my very sickly dying aunt at the time. And when the plane crashed, they didn't say 30 miles outside of Pittsburgh where I was. They said in Pittsburgh, and I thought my mother was in danger.
It was, you know where that plane went down, right? United 93. Shanksville. Anyway, I was...
The conspiracy is Al-Qaeda's out to get me and mine, I guess.
I did not live in New York at the time. I live in San Francisco, but I was a drummer in a metal band called Burmese, and we were on tour, and we were headed toward New York. And we were in Western Pennsylvania as well, not far. We'd, like, done a show the night before, and we'd gotten a hotel and crashed there for the night and woke up in the morning and everything was different.
Yeah.
And we had to cancel the rest of the tour because we had like three dates in New York and we were broke and our shows were all getting canceled. So we had to turn around and go home. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I was fascinated with those buildings. I was fascinated by how they fell apart. I was fascinated by how long it took them to redevelop that piece of land downtown. Mm-hmm. And so I went to the 9/11 Museum and to get a look, and it is very fascinating. There's lots of interesting artifacts and interesting timelines and information about it. And that only lasts for like half of it. The reflecting pools that are on the surface, on the ground, mm-hmm. they are made in the footprints of the original buildings.
Yes.
So these two big reflecting pools of water pours in constantly, and it's all the names of the victims are etched into the thing. That's beautiful and very sobering and powerful. And you go into the museum, it's actually beneath that. It's underground. It's beneath that area. And when you're in the museum walking around, you walk around the still existing, like, concrete foundation of the two buildings. Mm-hmm. And after, like, a few hours of looking at things that are, like, crushed and covered in dust, it really starts to take its toll on you, and you become very aware of the fact that you're walking around in a grave.
Not just a grave, a mass grave.
A mass grave. And there's, and then by the time you get to the end, some of the artifacts that are on display become really... I didn't need to see, like, a bunch of pairs of glasses that were, like, picked up on the street or artifacts like that. Like, it's, some of it feels like it's too deliberately trying to just make you hurt. Mm-hmm. There are Kleenex dispensers everywhere and just people crying everywhere. It's kind of horrific. Here's the thing that I find the most disturbing about the entire 9/11 memorial, and I don't think they even intended this. I think it was just really callous planning. But when you go into it, because it's a site that's going to get a lot of attention, you have to go through metal detectors.
Right.
Because they're not going to let just anybody go in there without checking them out. Mm-hmm. But the way the metal detectors and the lines that you go through to go through metal detectors before you enter the museum, they are set up exactly like airport security. Exactly. Like, they look just like him. And I don't think that that was an intentional decision, but it was a really poor one.
Yeah.
Because for the second I walked in, I was like, hey, this is going to be...
Oh, man.
So anyway, there's my bummer. That's what I've done since last month. I went to the 9/11 Museum and had a real bad time.
Hooray!
Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. I don't even know why I brought that up.
Because feelings. You had them.
Yeah. I'm glad I got to talk about it now. Nelson Lugo would not let me talk about 9/11. He knows that I have this weird interest in it, and he won't ever let me talk about it. Which reminds me, Nelson Lugo cannot be here this month.
He's currently at the 9/11 Museum crying.
Yeah, he actually set aside tonight to go check it out, and then we decided to record, and so he's there right now. So anyway, our
hearts
go out to Nelson Lugo at the 9/11 Museum.
Enjoy the glasses, or don't, because apparently it's not enjoyable.
It's not. It's terrible.
No, it's just bad news.
There's like voicemail recordings.
Yeah.
It's just awful. Anyway, other than that, summer's been real nice.
Summer's been hot.
Yeah.
Speaking of hot.
Yes.
Some of our listeners have sent us follow-up emails for reasons.
That's true. Last month we did a mailbag episode.
We did, and we did ask for follow-ups for things.
And we got some.
And we got a bunch. So I am generally delighted with the email responses we're getting. I feel like it's because I say the email address so much. If you would like to send us an email, please, epicpodcast@gmail.com. That's us. Say hey. We like you.
We got a follow-up email from Kay Wise. You may recall Kay Wise wrote to us during the job episode back in March.
Yeah.
And then did a follow-up talking about his terrible boss.
Which we read. And now we have yet another
follow-up. Another update. And if you have been following the saga of Kay Wise and his shitty boss, buckle up. Hey, Lugo, Schaefer, and Rachel. So some of the things on my previous list have actually gotten better. Now that the former secretary is not in the office anymore, the owner's attention is more focused on his actual work that needs to be done. That, and I told him that some of the things need to stop because, quote, I'm so fucking sick of it, I'm ready to walk out and not come back, end quote. Don't let that stop you from having fun anyway. Send all of your boss advice to... There's an email address. I would prefer to keep that address off the air, just between us. I'll be picking up a bottle of rum this weekend and playing the drinking game, so maybe I'll send another email then. Love you guys. Love the show. K-Wise. So, if K-Wise, you say you're going to be picking a bottle of rum this weekend and playing the drinking game and maybe send another email, I guess you'll be sending that email to epicpodcast@gmail.com. Drink. Well, that's great. We now have K-Wise's boss's email address, so we can send horrible things to him. But we're not going to share it with you guys because...
Vigilante justice.
We're experts in this. We're like AC/DC in Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap.
Except we're doing it for free.
Thanks, K-Wise. It's nice to hear that things have turned around somewhat. No. We're still going to send ridiculous shit to your boss.
Yeah, we might also send like a couple cat videos because apparently that improves your mood. And maybe if your boss's mood is improved, he'll be a better boss.
Hmm. That's an excellent strategy.
Well, I read that once. Our next email comes from A. The Mastermind. Dear Epic Pie Cast Crew. Damn it. Let me try that again. Dear Epic Pie Cast Crew. Shit. One last try. Dear Epic Pie Cast Crew. Thank God I got it this time. My name is Adam the Mastermind, or ATM, or The Mastermind, but you can call me Adam. Real name. Or whatever floats your boat, ship, destroyer, or other various aquatic vehicles designed for either transportation or warfare or something else. Rambling, I do that, whoops, I'm typing this, stop, god damn it. There. I'm a nerdcore rapper from the West. My persona is that of an evil genius and liar who manipulates events from the background. Okay, so now that that's over, I would just like to thank you all for the quality entertainment you provide to the masses of the world and such, yada, yada, yada. You are all great and give me joy straight to my ear hole. I know this was after the mail episode, but I'm happy, kind of. I was going to send an email, but never did for some reason. Rambling again. I've been a long-time listener every episode. I remember the time Schaefer and Lugo reenacted the scene from Goodfellas, and Rachel, not used to it, was appalled by Schaefer's snarkiness. That was the best. Long email, but bear with me, almost done. I live in Bakersfield, California, but I will be moving to New York very soon. I will be staying in Troy, so I'll have to come out and see you all perform sometime. If only you could come out to California. I would love to meet all of you sometime, maybe at one of your shows. I digress. There will be time for that someplace down the line, or maybe in another timeline. They're in their lair with layers of bear bears, whatever that means. Keep doing what you're doing, and have a good time, stuff, year, day, night, whatever it happens to be for you, month, week, yeah, and 4th of July stuff thing, America, yeah, and goddammit, stop! With love and the discreet scent of old cheese, ATM, P.S., less than 3, Schaefer.
Thank you, A. The Mastermind.
Thank you, A. The Mastermind.
I don't know what to really... I don't know that there was a question there, but... There was just a lot of praise and written in the grips of a manic episode. But thank you so much for listening and for taking the time to write that.
I would like to do a quick correction.
Okay.
Real quick. I was not
appalled at Schaefer. There's a character in the script of Goodfellas who I was reading.
Yeah, that's true. She was reading the character. She was reading the character, the restaurant owner in that scene.
Yes.
So your Goodfellas fan cred just lost a point.
But I will thank you immensely for thinking that I was being sincere.
Because you thought that she was giving an incredibly convincing performance, so your point has been reinstated.
Acting for the win.
Anyway, you're moving to Troy. I don't know where that is.
I don't know where that is.
It's in upstate New York, but come down to the city when you move to Troy, and we're always all doing stuff constantly.
We are.
All right. But thank you, Ada Mastermind. Mm-hmm. Jay Lalone writes, "Hey there, podcasters. You got my name right and inspired a new career choice. Thanks.
Yay.
After hearing you guys read my emails, it really sounded like I'm up my own ass. I'll have to work on that with future emails. Anyway, still loving the show. Thanks for the volume bump, Jay Lalone." Yes, Jay Lalone asked us to turn up the volume, so we fixed it last month.
We did.
So now I still appreciate that you brought that to our to our attention. I don't feel like you sound like you're up your own ass.
No.
You sound like a delightful young American.
Also, now the new volume we're at is forever Lalone mode, so you deserved it.
Huh.
Oh. Our next email comes to us from an N-Craft. There's no greeting here, so I'm just going to go into it. It's not that I forgot. It just isn't there. Recognize. "As someone who used to put on a 3-hour college radio show that I'm pretty sure absolutely no one listened to, I know how important feedback can be. Ha. I've been listening to the show on and off for a while. I love you guys. You are the answer to the perennial question, who's the boss? The boss is you, the hosts of the Epic Podcast. I really enjoyed the Doctor Who episode. I'm in the same boat as Schaefer. Admission, I can never remember how to spell that correctly without looking. I really want to be Schaefer. I want it to be S-C-H-A-E-F-E-R or S-H-A-F-E-R or X-A-F-F-U-E-R. That last one was a joke. Nested parenthetical. What? I've never seen an episode of Doctor Who, but now I feel like I have. Yay? Yay. I work out of the home, doing web stuff, for an evil government contractor. Not Halliburton or anything. Just slightly evil, but not truly evil. Listening to you guys and the Nerdy Show guys makes me feel like I have friends and coworkers I like. Yay? Yay. So thank you for sharing yourselves with us. I really appreciate and enjoy it. By the way, totally missed the episode where Rachel did an official name change to her real name. I am intrigued. Best to you all, N-Craft."
Aww.
Aww.
Well, thank you, N-Craft.
N-Craft. I do want to take a moment and say he sent 3 more emails, essentially like live emailing the Doctor Who episode. He commented on Doobly Doo and I Want to Watch Him Cry and the Lalone mode.
Yeah.
So
he commented on additional elements because he was basically live emailing us while he was listening to the latest episode.
I hope you were drunk, N-Craft. I really hope that that's why the live emails happened. If you are a faithful listener, would like to get drunk and live email this, please don't.
That's listen to Rachel.
I can't remember what episode it was that I made the
doesn't matter change. That's all of our archives, our back issues
we're all
are
there.
All online, so you can go find the one
and you don't have to listen for very long.
No, she does it kind of at the top.
Yeah,
and then we start over.
Yeah, and then we go back and we redo
the intro, and then you make the announcement, and we redo it. But
yeah, so if you listen and you hear that I say Charles Stunning, and then you listen to the next one I say Rachel Shen, go back to that one where I last said Charles Stunning.
You say Charles Stunning now, it makes me go, who is this?
Who's that person? I don't know.
Anyway,
she's crazy.
Thank you, everybody, for writing in this month.
Thank you.
Appreciate your feedback. You were mostly writing to us to tell us that you like us, and so, yes, thank you very much. That was very kind of you.
I feel all warm and tingly, and it's not just the weather.
What do you say, Rachel? Do you want to take a break?
You know what? I actually have a thing that I need to do.
Oh.
So,
terrific. Well, we are going to take a break and we're going to come back. We have a guest this month. Now, the guest isn't actually here. The interview segment was pre-recorded with Nelson Lugo, who couldn't be here this month because he's currently at a Christian reprogramming camp for middle-aged atheists.
But if you ask him, he'll say he's been shaving his toes.
He doesn't want to fess up to that because being an atheist is kind of his thing now.
Yeah.
So he's not here with us this evening, but he was here earlier when we recorded the interview segment with our guest. So we're going to go ahead and air that, and then Rach and I will be back to wrap up this show. How does that sound?
That sounds great. And God bless you, Nelson Lugo.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a moment.
I always knew I'd have to fight for anything worth doing, and the proof is in the life that I have been pursuing. I did what I decided I was meant to be choosing, divided by the line between winning and losing. Been a bit of confusion. Yeah, I had to clear some gray areas and let some people know that I'm here to break barriers. There hasn't been this many weird and strange various theses and theories since the dawn of the age of Aquarius. If you got a stage and a place we can crash at, we got a lifelong passion and a hatchback. Planned a tour and an album in the abstract. With 2 weeks' notice, we finished in half that. This record isn't a letter of resignation. It's a thanks for all your positive messages and your patience. That's why we put in the effort and dedication, trying to become something better than entertainment. We ain't stopping for nothing, and you know this. Stay focused, 2 weeks' notice. We ain't stopping for nothing, and you know this. Stay focused, 2 weeks' notice. We ain't stopping for nothing, and you know this. Stay focused, 2 weeks' notice. We ain't stopping for nothing, and you know this. Stay focused. I work my fingers to the bone for little to no reason, little to no payment even in the busy season. Best behavior was never really my thing. I got backed into a corner, all I heard was cha-ching. Now it's a paper chase, struggle every time to the same. Thinking about the bottom line, laying awake instead of sleeping. Thought I was creeping on the come up, I sliding down the mountain, throwing coins in the bone fountain. No sick days, it's just a puddle, I might drown it. And I guess that I deserve it, but my last days are mine. So there I quit it, I've had it, I'm over it, I'm fine. But like on the weekend, can you spare some overtime? Maybe I can get some extra hours while I got a brief floor. I mean, alright, okay, my plate's pretty full. I mean, yeah, I could use the day off. Okay, alright. We ain't stopping for nothing, and you know this. Stay focused, 2 weeks' notice. We ain't stopping for nothing, and you know this. Stay focused, 2 weeks' notice. We ain't stopping for nothing, and you know this. Stay focused, 2 weeks' notice. We ain't stopping for nothing, and you know this. Stay focused.
Ladies and gentlemen, our guest on the program this month is a former editor at DC Comics. Please welcome to the program, Rachel Gluckstern.
Hooray! Hello, Rachel.
Hello, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
I want to make sure that was the correct pronunciation, right?
Yes, Gold Star.
Oh, hey, look at that. First try. Awesome.
Now, that is actually not as easy as people might think.
Really? Do people have a hard time with Gluckstern?
They do.
How many times in your life would you average that you have used the phrase, it's pronounced just the way it's spelled?
I lost track. However, then people try and be clever and do the German pronunciation, you know, like Gluckstern, and I'm sorry, I'm American.
And you're like, oh, I took a year of German in college, and now I'm going to show up. Did everybody else in the building hear that?
Yes. I'm not surprised. You'd be surprised. I have had my last name butchered in more ways I could possibly imagine, and it's only 4 letters long.
It would be a struggle for me to find a way to mispronounce your name.
Yeah, I know, because
tend generally mispronounce it?
Well, it's pronounced Lugo, mm-hmm. and it's spelled L-U-G-O. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten all kinds, like Lego, Luego, Lugastis, Lugenstein. Like, I've gotten, like, bastardizations of that name. But we're not here to talk about me.
Adding extra letters.
I don't know, because people are stupid.
Now, Ms. Gluckstern, we have... been in contact with you a number of times over the past year to ask you to
It's been a saga, actually. Kind of a saga.
A guest on the program.
Oh, wow. You guys going to put this in verse?
Oh yes. We've begun. We're writing it on parchment. And also, I feel that you being with us now is kind of related to... how we introduced you as a former editor at DC Comics. Now, you were an editor at DC Comics, and you are currently no longer employed with the company.
Correct.
I'm assuming you left on good terms.
Oh, yeah.
Good. Amicable?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. They've relocated. They've left New York City.
They have left New York. They are in Burbank. They are all one with Warner Brothers at this point. Synergy.
Yeah.
That's sure. a thing.
I mean, they have a lot of work coming out down the
yes,
road.
They
so.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. Real serious business.
So it was about the hardest decision I've ever had to make in my life. But I really do love New York. And if I want to stay in publishing, New York is really the place to be.
Sure.
Sure. Yeah, makes sense.
So I've indulged myself with comics for the past 10 years. And now I'm thinking to kind of branch out and go into real publishing, which I would do finger quotes, but that doesn't really translate in a podcast.
It does, if you say it out loud first.
Yeah, absolutely.
So finger quotes, real publishing.
Now, in the interest of full disclosure, you have... Among the many titles that you worked on at DC as an editor, you worked on the one that I have spent the most time talking about on this show.
Yes, you have.
Which is
yes.
Batman and Robin.
Yes,
that is
incessantly.
Right.
In addition to which, you worked on Detective.
Uh-huh.
You worked on Catwoman.
Right.
We're going to get to those titles, but I want to take it back to when you started working for DC. How did you become an editor at DC Comics?
Well, I always wanted to do editorial work. My mom was an editor, actually, of another type of niche material, Sunday school lessons. Believe it or not.
Okay.
But I knew editorial work was where I was headed in college. I decided, hey, comic books, that would be great. Batman is my favorite, so that would be a really awesome.
So you read comic books as a young woman?
Oh, comics has actually been part of my entire life.
Oh, wow. Nice.
I come from a proud lineage of nerds. As yes. a matter of fact, in my collection, I've got a couple of boxes of 70s Marvels that I'm borrowing from my uncle indefinitely. And when I was about 15, I was having a conversation with my dad about Batman and Superman. I was like, I think I like Batman better.
Yeah.
This is something cooler. And my dad's like, well, did you ever read the comic where Batman beat up Superman? And then he handed me his copy of Dark Knight. So it's a bit of a legacy.
Was that a moment for you when you read Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns? Is that like a delineation in your life? Like, there was a moment.
It's definitely a big pivotal moment.
You had life before it and then a life after it.
I think everybody does when they read it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely.
I wanted to know if that was also held true to somebody who was a fan who ultimately found himself in the business.
I think that's true for most of the professionals around my age.
Really?
And a little older. Oh, yeah.
So when you went to college, was your focus to be in comic books the entire time?
It was. The college I went to allowed me to design my own degree.
Oh, wow.
So
okay.
I did that with focusing on creative writing, but with an eye towards someday I'm going to be in comics.
Right.
Which meant a lot of film classes, actually.
Sure. Yeah. Makes sense.
And then I interned between my junior and senior years at DC in the Batman office.
Nice.
Denny O'Neill was kind of phasing out at that point, and Bob Schreck was phasing in, so
right.
got to work with both of them, which was pretty cool.
Wow.
And then the next year I graduated and moved to New York and then banged on their door for 3 years until they finally got sick of it and hired me.
You were tenacious.
Yes.
I would imagine a lot of people are dying to get a job at, and I just want to say these words again, the Batman office.
Well, I did not start out in the Batman office when I started working there.
Okay, let's talk about that. So after you interned for them, and then...
3 years went by.
3 years of dogged pounding on the door went by, and you land the job. You
mm-hmm.
are now an editor at DC Comics.
Assistant
editor at DC Comics. What assignments do they give you at first?
Was it Looney Tunes comics?
That was actually part of it.
Yeah!
Awesome.
Really?
Yeah.
coincidence, though, in that case. I was working with Joan Hilty, who was working on both DCU books and the licensed kids books.
Wow. Okay.
And so, I'd help her. I just basically assisted her on everything. And she let me have a pretty strong hand running the kids' books. That was really great training.
Oh, wow. Oh. Good.
So you get to learn how to manage, you know, the editorial workflow and start building your relationships. And more than that, because everything has to fit a certain, you know, licensing standard, that helps you get a good eye for quick story, you know, getting down to the story essentials, staying on model, yada, yada, yada.
Right, right. So what? So please, for the uninitiated, what exactly does an editor do at DC Comics?
Well, it depends who you ask.
Well, then, what exactly did you do? I would imagine that, I mean, it's a lot of reading of scripts. It's a lot of looking at layouts, and it's a lot of like managing schedules and time and deliverables and things like that. But did you also have to like soothe egos and talk people down from ledges? I mean, were you like part sort of like proofreader and part like counselor?
Actually, pretty much you've described everything very correctly. Oh, wow.
Well done.
The pretentious way I use to describe it, uh-huh. It's a lot like being a movie director, you know.
Oh, okay.
I'm not writing it.
Sure.
I'm not drawing it. But I'm responsible for making the whole production happen.
Oh, that, sure. Okay, yeah, that makes perfect sense.
So
okay.
You see everything from proposal all the way to pushing out the door to getting to the printer.
So, I mean, I would imagine you have, especially in the scripting process, there's probably lots of material that you have to do then to try to make the story fit in the page allotment. And I would imagine a storyteller is going to want to give you as much as possible because they, he or she has a story in mind, that you would have to probably do a lot of editing of script.
I mean, most of the people I worked with know how to tailor their story to fit the page allotment. You know, it's not like page count is a mystery to them.
Okay.
They know exactly how many pages they have each issue.
I guess what I'm wondering is then, what about in layout? If you say a story is trying to be told from A to B, and you get these layouts of where the panels are for the story, would you have input in saying, you got to make this tighter?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Even with the imagery too.
Yeah.
And you would have to send things back to the pencilers to say, no, 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 we don't need 6 reaction shots in a row.
I mean, a lot of writers nowadays lay things out so tightly in their scripts. Like exactly in this panel, there's going to be this reaction shot, mm-hmm. and exactly in this panel, there's going to be this punching. So a lot of artists don't necessarily even have to worry about breaking down. But sometimes they would like that challenge more.
Sure.
So that's where the Marvel method actually is an artist friend more than a writer's friend sometimes.
Oh?
Well, because the Marvel method, as we know it, you know, you get a plot. You don't get a panel-by-panel breakdown. You just get kind of, you know, this is what's happening on this page. This is the important part.
Wait, now that's what who gets? That's what the editor gets, or that's what the artist gets?
It's what the editor will approve to send to the artist.
Okay.
And that, so that type of description, the artist then has more room to make up how many panels are going to be on the page and how to lead up to that.
I see. And then, so the writer goes in later to fill in more of the details with dialogue and...
Yes.
I see.
How does the Marvel method then differ then from, say, other comics companies? Is it?
Well, I mean, Marvel method is just sort of the shorthand. You know, we're allowed, DC's allowed to use it too. It's just.
Oh, I see. It's a method that was perhaps developed over there.
Yes.
And yeah. That's, okay, I get it.
It's how Stan and Jack would work.
Oh, I see. All right.
Welcome to comic books, Schaefer.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
I'm very interested in these colorful books that you read, Nelson, and I would like to try some myself someday.
So you graduated from the kids' books. So what was your first big mainstream title that you worked on?
Well, I got to work on the kids' books for a good long time, both as an assistant and then... solo editing some of them. Actually, one of my favorite jobs was a kids' line book. But the very first actual...
Which one?
DC Super Friends.
Oh, with Marvin and the Wonder Twins? And...
No. It was actually the regular like Justice League team. Uh-huh. There was a line of toys from Fisher Price.
Oh right, okay, yes.
Kind of blocky.
Yes, yes, yes.
And yeah. Admit the designs took a little use to get it. It took a little. You know what I'm trying to say.
Sure. Absolutely, absolutely.
Getting to work, you know, that ended up being a lot of fun. It was like the book I would work on to unwind from everything else.
Okay.
My very first mainline DCU miniseries was a Batlash miniseries.
Which one?
It came out in 2006. It was written by Sergio Aragonés.
Okay, yeah, I do know this one.
A Western writer who actually was living in my hometown at that time.
Oh,
huh.
Because all roads lead back
to what? To Fort Collins.
To Fort Collins, Colorado. And it was drawn by John Severin, the legendary John Severin, sure, from EC Comics, who was living in Denver. So,
oh, look at that.
What was Batlash?
Batlash was the offbeat cowboy. He wasn't necessarily like a stoic, rugged mountain man. He was... he was more of a ladies' man. He was like Maverick.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say. Like, think of Maverick with a whip.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
He was charming. He was educated. He would much rather sweet talk his way out of a situation than fight people. And he really liked the ladies.
Huh.
And the ladies liked Lash.
And the ladies liked Lash.
And apparently so did the Lugo. The Lugo also liked Lash.
I do. I like Batlash. Yes, I definitely like Batlash. wow. Okay.
So then
essentially you kind of worked your way up the ranks, mm-hmm, as they say, and then you ended up in the Bat Office again.
Well, wait, there's some stuff before the Bat Office.
Oh, wait, yes.
Right?
You actually brought to fruition a title that most people would consider kind of offbeat. And that was Amethyst, right?
Amethyst happened while I was in the Bat Office, actually.
Oh, really?
It was all part of the New 52.
That's right. That's right.
But that
that was also one of my goals, though.
Okay, so you set this goal. I'm going to go to New York, and I'm going to work on Batman. Done. And then you also set this goal.
I was the first person really allowed to be... allowed to revive Amethyst since the 80s.
Right. You worked on it, and that... Like you said, that came with the New 52.
Yes.
Did she come with her own? Was it a standalone book?
Yes. She was in the fantasy anthology Sword of Sorcery.
Okay.
Then there was a couple of backups. One was Beowulf, and one was Stalker, the man without a soul.
Okay. That sounds familiar. I the words being said always kind of crack me up when they like the name has like a tagline.
Yes. Right? Yes. Yes. Wow.
I feel like I've been really bad with my life at setting goals and then pursuing them, because there's two of them. I would like to be a part of reviving Amethyst. Boom.
Done.
In fairness, I'd been basically begging to revive Amethyst ever since I started working there. And again, like my banging on the door just to get hired, I think they were just finally like, fine.
they realized that if you went to them with something, they could only blow you off for so long.
I am a little persistent.
That's another lesson I should have been employing my whole life. But there was some other stuff, too. You worked on Teen Titans.
Yes.
You worked on Teen Titans. So this would have been 2010, 2011?
Yeah, I guess 2000, so hard to keep track. I guess 2010, because we launched the New 52 in 2011.
Yeah. I got excited, because I'd asked you before this what some of the titles were that you'd worked on, and you told me that working on Teen Titans with Nicola Scott?
Yep. And J.T. Kroll.
Yeah. That had been kind of a benchmark. Or that had been like a milestone in your career.
Yeah.
So I to get myself up to speed for this, I bought a couple of books. I'd read a lot of the stuff that you published in monthlies, as you know from us being friends on Facebook. But I went and I picked some up, and so I get this Teen Titans trade, which is this must have been published around the same time that Morrison was doing his Batman and Robin. When Grayson was Batman and Damian was Robin.
I think it was shortly after Morrison had wrapped up, if I remember correctly. Okay. But
it was around that era of Batman. Batman was
dead.
A million air quotes, dead.
Sure.
And Grayson was Batman. So, and I loved that run so much. So when, as we were getting ready to, as I was went and picked up some comics to like kind of bone up on some stuff you'd worked on, I picked up this Teen Titans one, which is a Teen Titans book where Grayson is Batman and he drops Damian off with the Teen Titans and says, "You guys deal with them." And I was just like, it's more of this era of this, of these characters that I didn't read before because I've always strangely passed over things like Teen Titans and Justice League and various teams of the DC Universe. And I read this thing. I couldn't put it down, and it was so exciting, and it was so fun to have, like, more input on the character of Damian from that era, which is...
Yeah.
The Grant Morrison trades of the Batman and Robin run where Grayson was Batman. I just love that stuff so much. And as you know, and as both of our listeners know, I feel a very... deep and complicated emotional connection to Damian Wayne.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Some might say problematic.
Not problematic. I just think he's an amazing character. He's such an amazing character.
Yes, I agree. Absolutely.
And I got to... So getting more Damian to read was...
It was so much fun having him be part of Teen Titans.
What was... like? Why was this moment a milestone for you?
Well, because... you do kind of measure your career by, you know, what big names you get to work on.
Sure, the people you work with. Sure.
The people you work with, but also the characters you work with.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And so the Teen Titans are kind of a big deal to hardcore DC fans. And finally getting to be the editor on Teen Titans was like, you know, it made me feel like I'd achieved a certain level in my editorial career.
Okay, that makes sense.
It made me feel like a fool that I'd missed out on it. It was a great book.
Yeah,
that
was a lot of fun.
That was a great read. I feel like I should probably go and pick up some more stuff from that era of Teen Titans and get myself up to speed.
Yeah,
It was great. The team dynamics are great. Their costume designs are great.
As a diehard hardcore DC fan, I love the Teen Titans.
I know you do. I know you do because I actually, a few years ago, Nelson got kicked out of one of his apartments, and I have indefinitely been holding his comic book collection. So I know what you've read for years.
Because you've been leafing through it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a ton of Teen Titans in there.
I fucking love Teen Titans.
And tons of The Flash.
I love The Flash.
I worked on The Flash at one point, too.
Of course you have.
Really?
Of course you have.
As either assistant or associate editor.
Is there a corner of DC Comics where you weren't involved in at all?
I never got to work on a Wonder Woman book.
What?
I know. That is one goal
I did not
achieve. And I never really worked on any super books.
Huh. Really?
Yeah.
No big S?
No big S.
Huh. Interesting.
And I actually like Superman quite a bit. I'm not just saying that because you're wearing a Superman shirt.
No, I love the New 52 Superman. I wasn't such a big fan of pre-New 52, but New 52 Superman I really love a lot. That's so sad that you didn't get a chance. Is it because, in my head, is it because it's kind of like the Jets and the Sharks and the Batman office and Superman office are like like constantly at like war with one each other and they rumble during like lunchtime around the vending machines?
Well, I mean, the Batman team already wins because we do Batman. So
they do.
But is there some battle dancing by the Coke machine?
Do you want to see comics nerds dance?
Yes.
Yes, I do.
Yes, I do.
I want a reality show where that's all that happens.
You also worked on JSA, which is, I'm going to admit right now, just I'm going to show my total ignorance. I don't know anything about JSA. In fact, the first time I ever even heard of the Justice Society of America was leafing through your comic books.
God.
But I read a book that you edited, the JSA versus Cobra, and there are all these characters that, with which I was not...
Well, it's mostly made up of Golden Age.
Right,
heroes.
Like there's old Flash.
Well, the original Flash.
The original Flash.
Yes. Jay Garrick.
Would you... What?
No, I like how you're very careful to call him the original Flash, not old.
No, it's kind of like Star Trek and Next Generation. Like, you never call Star Trek the old Star Trek. It's always the classic Trek or the original Trek.
This is how I learn.
Okay.
By saying the wrong thing and getting corrected.
Yes.
The original Flash.
Yes, the original Flash. Yes.
He's really likable in that Cobra.
He is. I fucking love Jay Garrick.
Actually, I know this is blasphemy, but my favorite Green Lantern is Alan Scott.
Oh.
Really?
Always will be. Ooh. Oh, I never really worked on any Green Lantern books either.
Huh.
Come think of it. It was, I mean, part of it is, you know, there's like the Batman group, and there's the, you know, Justice Society group, and the Superman group. So it just depends who you're working with.
So sometimes. every title has its own office, essentially?
Yes.
Okay. So there isn't like the Batman office and the Superman office and then everybody else.
I mean, that's probably how they view it, but that's not how they're supposed to say it.
Okay, I want to get to this. You worked on Batman Robin with Gleason and Tomasi, or is it Tomasi?
Tomasi.
Tomasi.
You're on a roll.
I'm on a roll.
Look at that. These are
names I have never said out loud
before.
There
you go.
So you worked on the New 52 run of Batman and Robin with Gleason and Tomasi. My favorite book of the New 52. My favorite Batman book. My favorite Batman book. You're supposed to go from general to specific.
Sure.
It was my favorite book of the New 52. Right. I had such an emotional connection to it. All the way up through Robin's death and the Requiem storyline and issue 18, the silent issue that I wrote a song about. I was very connected to these
yes.
stories.
Some
and
might this, say problematically
the,
connected.
The way they,
I,
the way
I
they
am
were,
endlessly flattered by the fact that you wrote a song about it.
I was so moved. I've been reading Batman for a very long time, and I've never really cared much about the Robins. I never really did. I never really cared about Tim Drake. When I was a kid, I called the 900 number and voted for Jason Todd to die.
So did I. So did I. yeah.
I just
and then
didn't really
both your parents said, "The hell is this?"
Yes. What is this charge? Are you calling porn?
Oh no! I begged permission. My mom was just like, "Just go do your thing." So I never really. I didn't like him. I thought that the character of Robin was too colorful and too corny and just didn't really make any sense. And he took the edge off of my beloved Batman. And then Damian Wayne came along, and I mean specifically the New 52 Damian Wayne changed my attitude about Robin. Like, I now like the other Robins so much. I like them now because I like Damian Wayne as Robin so much that it completely changed my
attitude
about the character.
Actually, I went through a similar process, which is something I'm probably not supposed to say as a former DC editor. But for years, Kerry Kelly was, you know, my favorite.
Sure.
Obviously.
Oh, obviously, yeah.
But Damian really turned things around.
Yeah, it was a complicated character that... that gave, you know, you have Bruce Wayne all these years and, you know, still mourning his parents, but you never see Bruce Wayne in a parental relationship either on either end of it. And watching him clumsily try to be a father to Damian Wayne was something and really inspired storytelling and added so much more to the character that is normally only, I feel like his stories are best told by his villains. It was nice. I felt like seeing his own flesh and blood as this endless conflict in his life was a really beautiful element to the Batman universe.
I know that Alan Moore had basically emphatically been quoted to say that he wrote Damian to basically be dead forever. Or is that not the case?
Wait.
Because you're giving me a face
not
now.
I'm sorry.
I'm having a brain fart.
We'll let you get there.
No, please help me.
Grant Morrison?
Grant Morrison, thank you. Holy shit. The internet is yelling at me right now. So Grant Morrison had basically planned for Damian to be dead. And that his story will not continue any further. Were you a part of the decision-making process at DC that decided to keep that going or at least open the door for more stories?
It was always... Yeah, I mean, it wasn't any mystery that was going to be happening. Grant, I think it's better to qualify Grant's statement as the way I understood it was he wasn't going to be writing anything more, but he fully understood the nature of reviving popular characters, so I don't think it's anything he has a problem with.
Right,
he's
right.
Just, you know, he's told his story, he has dropped his mic, he's out. But, Tomasi, you know, Pete was Grant's editor for a good long time before he jumped over to the writing thing. I mean,
oh, really?
They have a very good relationship.
Oh, wonderful.
So,
okay.
he, you know, it was not any surprise to Grant.
Right. Well, I don't think it was any surprise to anybody else, really. You know, comic books.
I do remember Schaefer being upset.
Yes. All right, look, I got really upset.
Really upset's a bit of an understatement.
Here's the thing. I think
you actually kicked a comic book out the window as in a protest to how upset you were.
Look, I'm a child. the thing that maybe kept me away from so much like Justice League stuff or other of the superpowered or supernatural characters of the DC universe is I like Batman because, you know, he's immortal and he doesn't have powers. And even then, when I'm saying that, I still have to like qualify that every now and then because yes, there's some magic that shows up in the Batman universe a lot.
There's a lot
and
of magic.
Some of them I don't really care for, but some of them I make exceptions for. So sure. I have a complicated criteria that is flexible. But I didn't want to see it happen with Damian. I didn't want him to go to an alternate dimension and have Shazam along and bring him back from the dead. I didn't want that. I wanted him to be what Jason Todd didn't get to be, which was like this. Jason Todd's best work was when he was dead. And he was a reminder of Batman of his failures. And then when Jason Todd, I don't care for Red Hood as a character because I don't think he should be around. I forgive Damian Wayne coming back more than I still will forgive.
You know what? I used to think that way. Having read some Red Hood, I'm actually slowly starting to like the character now.
Okay.
He's growing on me.
So this is where I'm going with this. I'm not just sitting here. I didn't get you here to just listen to me talk about Damian Wayne. This is where I'm getting at.
He has a point to this diatribe.
Is it difficult then when you work on a book and you pour your heart out and you've been working on this book for months and months and months to see people like me, say, in your Facebook feed who are such big fans and they're talking about it all the time to suddenly start expressing their disgust and or their disappointment and their entitlement with what the story should be? Is that difficult?
Yes, of course it's difficult. But I would be silly to try and, you know, steer the opinions of my friends.
Right.
Right.
Your opinion is your opinion. You're a fan. You're allowed it. It is what I want people to know. What I would love fans to know, one thing is the editors do care. They are pouring all this work into the books because they love the characters just as much as the fans do, and they want to make these great things. And sometimes we disappoint. Sometimes we messed up. Sometimes, like in the case of, let's take Catwoman, actually, the new 52 Catwoman.
Yes, let's do, please.
When Catwoman number one came out, you know, she and Batman getting it on.
There is a sex scene.
It is a fantastic scene.
They are stripped down to masks.
Holy mackerel, yes.
There was a lot of outrage, particularly from people that whose opinion I generally respect about that, but I have to admit that.
What was the criticism that was the loudest for you for that first issue?
From my fellow feminist contingent who took it as yet another, we're exploiting female characters, yada, 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 which is because, all right, admittedly, you know, Catwoman was set out to be kind of a sexier book then, you know, but it was like the sexy female book, whereas Wonder Woman was not. I mean, it was acknowledging there's a flavor of fandom out there who likes
absolutely
sexy chicks in comics. But how do you? But my intention behind it was to at least make it the most intelligent, interesting, sexy book that I could.
And you know what? I agree. Doing my research for this interview, I read the first two trades of Catwoman after the New 52. And I have to say, watching Catwoman's and Batman's relationship was wonderful. I mean, prior to New 52, she seemed to always be one step ahead of everything, which can be wonderful, but it also can be very bland storytelling after a while.
Yes.
Here, she's not nearly as smart. She's more on impulse and instinct than anything else. She makes bad choices, and that is infinitely more entertaining story-wise because you get to see her grow. You get to see her learn from her mistakes.
You do have to show the consequences.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the consequences are quite severe in her world. And it just feels like a more grounded... I'm going to hate myself for saying this out loud. But it's almost like the Spider-Man effect, right? You have someone with real problems, real emotional quirks and character traits that are flawed, but has this tremendous ability to do things. And the choices that they make are what
things, including Batman.
And let me tell you, that's look.
Yeah, that those. I lingered on those panels for a while.
It is sexy as fuck.
Actually, the thing that annoys me the most about the criticism of that scene is that so many people try to make it worse than it was. They're all like, Batman and Catwoman were being all, you know, just banging on a dirty roof somewhere. I'm like, no, they're inside a nice penthouse.
Yeah,
they
a very nice the penthouse. It was they destroyed.
It's very clear in the way their body language is drawn and the way their dialogue is written in that scene that this is a loving relationship that has been going on for some time. It didn't look like it was like this. They were fighting on a rooftop, and then they're like,
carnal,
"I can't take this
loving
passion
any
longer."
I don't know if I agree with loving, but it's definitely carnal. It's very lustful. Like it's
those two things are not mutually exclusive.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Fair enough. But it's. I mean, everybody's consenting here, and everybody's working out some misplaced anger issues, which is a direct quote from the book.
I don't have that memorized.
I mean, but then again, I'm also a cisgendered straight male, so maybe I don't know what I'm talking about, but I loved it.
I really enjoyed the Catwoman run. I read I was reading that in monthlies up through like somewhere in around 30, I think, is when I finally started backing off because I don't want to start having to make more space for long boxes. I'm just gonna be more selective and read trades from now on. But I really liked that Catwoman run a lot. I liked how she became something of a folk hero.
Yeah.
And
I
thought that she was handled well, and I actually thought that it was kind of interesting that like there was a little bit of a Trojan horse with it. That first issue, there was like it was all action poses and sex scene with Batman and everything. The story is kind of belying all of that imagery,
uh-huh.
But then as you like progress, her story gets much more complicated.
Yeah,
yeah, and darker and sadder. And
I think Judd's greatest writing talent is how like really raw and visceral he can write emotions.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think a lot of people react to him so strongly just because they can't handle what he's...
Sure.
that's probably a fair assessment. Yeah.
Well, and these are probably critics who are like, I wanted a jiggle book. And these people are actually dealing with difficult things that I don't want to face.
I will share one thing. One colleague, like at the 11th hour, said that perhaps they could we should consider switching positions because it makes Batman look too submissive, and I nixed that one.
Really? Good. Good.
Yes.
Yeah, no, it's, yes.
Somebody had to say that note to another person who had to deliver that note to somebody that was like, hey. Our Batman is, we kind of write our Batman as a top. I know we don't say that.
It was no one in the Batman office.
It's just you accept that, right? All right. Yeah, good. I'm glad that I know that you were responsible for making that not happen.
Awesome. All right, look, I'm gonna ask you two questions. One of which I'm sure you'll be delighted to answer. The other one, we will bleep out all the things accordingly.
Oh, God.
Who are your favorite people to work with, and who are your not so favorite people to work with? Now we will bleep out names. I guarantee you, so feel free to both praise and denounce your heart's content.
Let's just focus on the first one.
There are too many people to name that I enjoyed working with, but on that Super Friends, DC Super Friends, that I actually is one of my secret favorites, everybody involved was great. The artist was Jay Bone, who did all the covers. And then Dario Brizuela and Stuart McKinney were the main artists. Jay would sometimes do an issue, and we had some guest artists like China Clugston and Scott Shaw come on in. And the writer was Sholly Fish, who actually used to be a senior VP of programming at Children's Television Workshop.
Oh, wow.
So who better to write?
Yeah, absolutely.
A young reader's superhero comic, really. But God, I mean, you know, everybody on Batman and Robin, everybody on Catwoman, everybody on Detective.
You worked on Detective.
One of the best parts about working on Amethyst was getting to work with Christy Marks, who most people know as the creator of Gem.
Yep.
Which is spelled differently than Gem.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
And Aaron Lopresti was truly great on that. There are so many people. I do want to give special shout-outs to John Kalis and Mick Gray from Batman and Robin, because Mick was the inker, and he was the first guy whose inks I really started noticing as a distinct inking style. Mm-hmm. You know, I come from a writer background, not an artist background. Sure. And I really started noticing them when I was reading Promethea.
Right.
Because he inked J.H. Williams. And then I worked with him on the Red Circle book, The Shield, which was like the Archie superhero. Mm-hmm.
I don't know that one.
The Shield was a Golden Age character.
Yeah.
And actually, Captain America was kind of a ripoff of The Shield originally.
Okay, now I'm vaguely picturing this now. Okay.
That triangular shield that Captain America used to have, he had switched to the round one because the triangular one was the Shield's shield.
Of course. Copyrights, yes. Yes, yes. Awesome.
Do you have any a particularly treasured anecdote from your time working at DC that you care to share that doesn't get you in trouble with anybody or burn any professional bridges?
I want to know who was the most difficult person you ever had to work with.
She could take off mic.
That's what I want to know. We will bleep the name.
Burn! We're going to leave that in.
We're leaving that in.
we'll bleep it.
So any anecdotes, any funny stories, any quirky things, any
I mean, this isn't really funny, but the Batlash miniseries, when I took over the project, there was already a proposal and kind of a loose outline of how the story would go, and I wanted to get something that at least echoed the classic origin a little bit more.
Sure.
But more importantly, his main girlfriend in it, the original outline had her, you know, she was going to be raped, and then she was going to be feeble-minded from the rape, and then die, and
yikes,
whatnot.
Good gravy.
And I had a really long talk with the writer and convinced him that maybe that wasn't the most original idea that you could do.
Sure.
And right, yes.
Maybe you'd want her to stand out better if she's going to be so important to send Batlash down the life that he eventually does, and to line it up more with the origin. So she lived, she didn't get raped, she nearly gets raped, but she actually fights off her attacker, and instead it aligned with the original origin where she eventually ends up in a convent somewhere.
Oh. Well, so basically the complete opposite of what they originally intended.
Yes.
But you still saved comic readers from the umpteenth rape motivation storyline. So
I was pretty proud of that.
Bravo. Thank you. On behalf of readership everywhere.
Oh, wait. I have a funny anecdote that's completely different from rape.
Okay.
Oh, awesome.
Okay.
Well, give it to us.
Back when I was working on the kids' comics, you know, I'd get all the kids' fan mail, mm-hmm. which was actually very adorable.
I can't even imagine.
Was it all, like, handwritten in pencil and crayons?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Nice.
And Teen Titans Go got the most fan mail, hands down.
Of course, yeah.
Sure.
And interestingly enough, Raven got the most fan mail.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me either. Yeah.
And my favorite letter was from some 9-year-old boy who sent in this picture of sad little Raven saying, "Life is useless."
Aww.
Did you get to keep it?
I hung that one in my office.
Aww, that's adorable.
Some 9-year-old little emo boy.
I know. Sure, a little goth in training.
Just connected so hard to
it. Yes.
Oh. That doesn't surprise me at all. Raven has been like the sort of like the surprise fan favorite for so long. So
she's great in that trade that I just read with Damien.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I gotta borrow that.
So
you want to come back sometime?
Sure, I can come back.
If you'd like to get Rachel Gluckstern to come back, then write us an email at epicpodcast@gmail.com.
Rachel Gluckstern, we would like to thank you so much for being on the program this month.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yay!
Hey, Lugo, look at this.
What?
No, look, real close.
What is that? I don't know. What am I looking at?
See you next month, fucker. Once again, we would like to thank Rachel Gluckstern for being our guest on the program this month.
Thank you, Rachel.
She was a great guest. I look forward to having her back so we can discuss more of the stuff I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, I don't want to be weird or anything, but what happened at the end of the interview? Oh. What was that?
Oh,
there was like some stuff, and then
that's not really important. Hey, Rachel.
Yes.
What do you say we do some plugs and we get out of here?
Ooh, let us plug things.
On Saturday, August 1st, I will be hosting the Pink Room Burlesque. That's Francine the Lucid Dream's ongoing burlesque tribute to the works of David Lynch, but we're taking this act on the road. We will be presenting a Twin Peaks burlesque show at Asbury Lanes in Asbury Park, New Jersey. On Tuesday, August 11th, I will be in Rabbit Hole Productions Presents Honey, I Stole Your Act. It is a show in which burlesque couples get together and perform one another's numbers. So, Hard Corey, who's been on the program, he and his partner, Clara Coquette, will perform one another's numbers. Joe Boobs Weldon and Johnny Pork Pie will perform one another's numbers. So will Tansy and Nikki Knickers. I will be in the show performing a bunny act that was created by my girlfriend, Bunny Buxom, and she will be rapping.
Cute.
On Saturday, August 15th, I will be performing at Le Poisson Rouge in Manhattan. I will be performing with Wheatus, the band who rose to fame with their song Teenage Dirtbag in the year 2000. Also on the bill, an awesome three-woman hip-hop group from Brooklyn called Handjob Academy, and the delightful MC Lars. That's Saturday, August 15th. Come do some rapping. And then at the end of the month in August or into early September, I will be on tour in the Midwest with also former guest of the program, Cool Z. We are doing a tour in the Midwest, a tour called the Heartland Horror Show. I will be posting all of the dates soon, but that's at the end of August. And that's what I got on tap, and probably spending some time at the movie theater because air conditioning.
Air conditioning.
What you got?
Ooh, on July 31st, which is the day after this airs, I will be in D.C. Doing the Weirdo Show at the Beer Baron Tavern in Washington, D.C. Come check it out.
It's Weirdo Show?
Yeah. I'm doing burlesque there. Oh. Charles Stunning will be there. I might also be there.
Huh.
On Tuesday, August the 4th, I will be a part of Lauren Moll's show, something, something, something. I don't remember. It's not written down because it's my birthday and I don't have to be responsible for things on that day. So mostly that's my birthday. Also, there will be a show. Hooray for that. On Friday, August 14th, at the Creek in the Cave at 10 p.m. will be Honey Badger Burlesque Presents Charles Stunning's Birthday Bonanza the Third. It will be the third installment of Charles Stunning's birthday show, featuring some of her favorite performers doing their favorite numbers. She'll be hosting. Come check it out. Or don't. I'm not your boss. On Wednesday, August 19th, Charles Stunning will be at White Elephant Burlesque in the Lower East Side somewhere. I'm really not paying attention to August because it's my birth month and I don't have to know things.
That's part of the benefit of your birth month.
Yeah, exactly. I have every intention of being just drunk and happy. So there's that. And on Saturday, August 29th, I will be co-hosting the Astoria Music and Arts Festival at Astoria Park with my bandmate, Mark Robert Turner. It'll be a day filled with joy and wonder and music, and hopefully a parent won't yell at us this time. We'll see, so come check it out. It might go down in flames, but honestly, I think it's going to be awesome. It's going to be from noon to 8 p.m. on the 29th. Wrap up your month with me. I'll be hungover. Birthday.
Awesome. I will go. It's in Astoria Park. It's not far from here.
Yeah, you can walk there.
I can walk there. Oh, one more thing before we go. Our guest, Rachel Gluckstern, this month, left behind some comic books. And we have a trade paperback of JSA, that's the Justice Society of America,
very cool,
versus Cobra, a trade paperback that was edited by Rachel Gluckstern. Oh. And she has signed it.
Ooh.
And we're going to give this away to one of our lucky listeners.
Ooh.
Will it be C. Muldrow?
Maybe.
Will probably. It be another listener? We don't know.
We don't know.
Here's how you enter this contest to win this autographed copy. Write to us at epicpodcast@gmail.com and pitch to us a superhero. Specifically, pitch to us a Teen Titan.
Ooh.
A Teen Titan that does not exist.
Yes.
You don't make an adolescent version of an existing DC superhero. Create your own superhero. You can send an artwork if you want, or you can just write a description. However you want to do it. But pitch to us a superhero who should be a member of the Teen Titans.
Mm-hmm.
And the best entry we get, we will mail you this trade paperback of JSA versus Cobra, edited by Rachel Gluckstern.
It's beautiful, by the way. You want to win this prize.
You want to win this prize. We wish Nelson Lugo a speedy recovery, and we hope to have him back in Studio 6C next month. And I think that's it.
That's feels good.
All right.
Feels real good.
Then, ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Epic Podcast, episode 34. I have been your host, Schaefer the Dark Lord.
And I have been your other host and your other host, Rachel Shank.
Be safe, internets.
Did you know the internet weighs about as much as a strawberry? The weight of all the electrons in motion that make up the internet at any given moment is equivalent to 50 grams.
Thank you for listening to the Epic Podcast.
We'd love to hear from you, our loyal listener. So send us your feedback, love mail, hate mail, dick pics, and recipes to epicpodcast@gmail.com. But seriously, don't send us dick pics.
As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend or funding the network via Patreon. Any size contribution gets you exclusive outtakes, episodes, and images from across the network. And there's even more perks available. Just head to patreon.com/nerdyshow. To find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. If you like what you heard, please rate and review us on iTunes or like and follow us on SoundCloud. For more podcasts, articles, community forums, and more, visit nerdyshow.com. And be sure to follow Nerdy Show and the Epic Podcast on all of your favorite social networks. If it's geeky, we've got it covered.